center and coming in as Lube. Hewittdyk centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Eckert, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Ryan Pike on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. Hour two of the program underway on this Tuesday, November 29th, coming at you from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. My name is Pat Steinberg with the managing editor of Flames Nation. Ryan Pike with us here in the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems Hot Stove Lounge as well. This is the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Unlock your home with the touch of your phone. Upgrade to smart locks online at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. You can get Flames Talk Hour 1, Hour 2, post-game, and bonus editions all wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon. Go hit subscribe. Hello, Pike. That's a very smart cardigan you're wearing today. I like it.
I'm also, unintentionally, I think we all wore blue ties today, which...
It's true.
Yeah, it's a good color.
Yeah, logo's not a tie guy, though, you know? So
he could be. I think he could pull it off if he wanted to.
I went with the knit tie. I did the square bottom knit tie is the one that I went with today.
I have a sort of a
very
satiny,
stylish.
A satiny one. It's less stylish in texture than yours, but I like yours better.
Why thank you. Let's go inside hockey, brought to you by Calgary Co-op. With new product families, member rewards, and sale events, you'll find more quality, more savings in every department every day at Calgary Co-op. Matthew Tkachuk's back at the Dome. He will play the Flames for the first time on this Tuesday night, and I do not know what to expect, Pike. I do not know exactly what to expect when it comes to reaction. Some think, like I know Francis has talked a lot about, he's going to get this massive standing ovation. I think some think he's going to get booed. I think it's going to be really mixed. I really do.
I don't think he's getting a standing ovation. On Thursday, when Sean Monahan comes to town,
I think he'll get the standing
ovation. Yeah, Sean Monahan gets a standing ovation. Monahan working, we've discussed it in the past, Monahan being Monahan right away made the rebuild, I think, really work much faster than it probably could have otherwise. But Tkachuk was a really important player.
And gave hope to it, too. Right?
Ooh, yeah. Can you imagine if Monahan comes in and is not Monahan, and then the team just sort of slogs until Gaudreau. And without Monahan, Gaudreau doesn't really work. So
it's true.
It could have been slim pickings here for a while. So I think Matthew Tkachuk was a really good player. He did a lot of good things. He was a guy that drew eyeballs to this market and to this team and got under the skin of a lot of players and opposition teams. And to be honest, probably opposition media too, in terms of how he plays. But I mean, that was the fun part of it.
What city would you be referring to when you opposition media? I
don't. Hard to say. There's a short list.
Does it rhyme with Schmedminton?
Perhaps. Maybe Schwinnipeg.
Yeah. Although I think it was just the coach that he got under the skin of in Winnipeg, who just happens to be his coach now.
Which is hilarious.
That was filthy. So what are you talking about? Yes, he's done some dirty things. That was not one of them. Anyway.
I think he gets a fairly positive mixed reaction, mixed leading to positive, but I don't think it'll be the same neighborhood as Sean Monahan.
Yeah, I agree. And then Johnny's down the road. Let's, before we go any further, more of your texts at 960-960. We'll read some of those as we go along as we're inside hockey. Let's just hear from him. Matthew Tkachuk on this Tuesday upon arriving at the rink, because on Monday night, the Florida Panthers fall 4-3 in overtime to the Edmonton Oilers. So they're on the second half of a back-to-back. But let's hear from Matthew Tkachuk. He spoke for about 7-8 minutes prior to the game, spoke to the Florida media, spoke to the Flames media, all over in the Ed Whalen Media Lounge. Let's hear from Matthew in his entirety as we continue along.
First, what was it like coming in here as a visitor today?
It was good. It was interesting. And yeah, for all you guys, Florida gets the first questions here. It's not like old times. I said that one back in Florida, you guys got a kick out of that one.
No,
it was weird. I mean, I just got to the rink now and it's just weird coming a different way. I mean, it's lots of great memories here, special times. My routine here is like, I mean, honestly, waking up and seeing like downtown, you just feels different. So it's probably not going to sink in until I get out there for warm-ups or for the game, but just super jacked up and excited. And like the guys that came this way probably had the game in Florida circle. It's same with me. Like I'm really looking forward to seeing the fans and playing in this awesome building again.
Matthew, you talked about the memories.
I wouldn't say nervous really, but pretty excited. Antsy, just kind of want to get it going here. I'm not really a type that gets too nervous about stuff, so I don't think it's much different for this.
Matthew, you talked about the memories here. Is there one that really sticks out to you?
No, not just one. Probably just, you know, so many great people I met. I mean, on ice was one thing, but like this is a city where I grew up in, and just got to know so many great people, and it just I grew as a person here. I just grew up here. I came in pretty oblivious to everything. I was 18 years old and not really thinking I probably knew a lot and not knowing anything. So grew up here, played with so many great teammates and so many that I keep in touch with, and just the relationships that I've created with guys here, you know, will last forever. So I think that's probably my favorite part about playing here.
Matthew, you've always been a player who you've inspired a lot of emotion in fans. So what kind of reception are you expecting tonight?
I've got no idea. I know I got booed last night, so hopefully not the case tonight, but you never know.
You've seen it with so many other guys. We get to that first TV timeout, and everyone looks up. Something goes on the Jumbotron. Can you kind of imagine what that moment's going to be like tonight for you?
Not really, no. See what happens. Honestly, I'll probably just be in the game and forget that it's coming, or forget about it. So if it happens, see how it goes. And you know, I wish, like, I kind of think that's like the organization's way of saying thanks and all that, but you know, I don't really get the chance to thank everybody. I mean, I have before, but not the same as that moment. So I obviously just thank all the fans and the people in this community that just made this place so special for me, and I unfortunately don't get to make a tribute for them, but I think they know how I feel about them.
How do you think your tenure with the Flames will be remembered by fans?
Well, I hope it's somebody that just left everything out there, on the ice, off the ice. I mean, I just tried to make an impact in the city, like both on and off the ice. I tried to leave it a better place than when I got here, and you know, there wasn't a game where I took off. You know, worked my hardest each and every shift, and tried to, you know, be an important part in the community as well. So hopefully they can remember that.
Matthew, a couple of the other guys have said that their first visit back to their old barn was sort of the stamp on the closing of that chapter of their life. Do you look at this in the same way, or has that chapter been closed for you already? Like, how do you approach?
Yeah, it's unfair to my – it'd be unfair to my new teammates, team, everybody that, you know, traded for me and brought me there to have me not close the door already. So I'd say – when I got traded here, as hard as it sounds, I closed the door then, just out of respect for them, and you know, there's no regrets or nothing like that. It'd be unfair to my teammates if I left it open.
Ask a guy like Sam what it's like coming back to Calgary, or do you come in kind of blind and wanting to experience it yourself?
No, I haven't really asked too many guys. Just I don't think it's as big of a deal as everybody's making it. So just see what happens, I guess.
You missed the weather, no doubt.
I actually didn't go outside today, so it looked cold though.
There were a lot of tubes coming off the bus. I thought you might pull one off there.
No, I don't need one where I am, so I didn't even think about it.
You had no problem sort of when you were Flame being the villain in an opposing barn. Would that still apply here, do you think? You'd still play with that same edge, that abrasiveness here in this building?
I mean, I go into every game, and I have since I can remember playing hockey, playing the exact same way, practicing, playing the same way. I mean, you guys and everybody else are the ones that make those assumptions or, you know, those names or whatever. So I definitely don't call myself that. So I'm just coming in here and playing the same way like I always have, and you guys will be able to say whatever you want after.
You still keep in touch with your old teammates?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a bunch of them over when we were in Florida, and then obviously back-to-back, didn't get to see any of them last night. So I think this is actually probably better this year, being at the first time back, and obviously all the outside distractions that could come into play. I think it's probably better that we're here so quick, and a quick turnaround, or back-to-back, tough back-to-back. But hopefully in the near future we can have some some extra time here because I'd love to show my teammates what all my spots were and what my what my life was like here.
What were your spots here?
I'm not telling you guys.
Yeah, it'd be a tough loss last night, but how do you feel the team's playing right now?
I think that we last night was probably our first game in a while where we probably deserve what we got. I mean, Spencer kept us in the game the whole night and played amazing for us. But even saying that, you have a lead late in the third, you got to find a way to close it out. So I think we've left a lot of points out there recently, and we're in a similar position as these guys are. I mean, we're on the outside by a very, very little bit, and you know we have to get points somehow. So. Tough road trip for us. We have to start with a win here tonight. Like I said, we've left a lot out there the last week or 2 weeks, so hopefully we can start tonight with a big win.
Matthew, can you just explain, like, mentally the mental challenge of being traded, coming off a career year, a 100-point season, and getting to a new team and dealing with expectations when you're coming off such a tremendous season like you had last year?
I didn't really have any mental challenges with it or really any challenges at all. The guys here have been great and opened me like right when I got here and just made it super easy for me to adapt. So really had no challenges.
There you go. That is Matthew Tkachuk. He spoke on Tuesday this afternoon prior to the game against the Florida Panthers will be the return of Tkachuk to the Scotiabank Saddledome. And here's the reason why I think, Pike, it's going to be a mixed response. Is let me read you a smattering of texts that continue to filter their way through at 960-960 for those who are listening live. So this says from Magarsa. He deserves a couple claps for all the years he was here and all the contributions he had on and off the ice. After that, he's getting booed and well-deserved. It's quite simple. You're either with us or against us. He clearly wanted out. He got his way, so he's going to get what he deserves. That's from Magarsa. This says a suggestion for a clap, rather for a chant. We don't need you. So it'd be, we don't need you. They could do that one. Then somebody else suggests that people should chant, where's your flip-flops?
That's a good one.
What was the one they were chanting to John Tavares the first time he went back to the island? There's something about Star Wars. It was something like that.
Because he had the least pajamas, right?
Where's your jammies or something like that.
That's just a good chant.
Islanders fans rule. this says, cheer for Tkachuk before the puck drop, but after that, he's the enemy. That's from Jay in Silverado. And this says, Matthew did not give his all the time. He disappeared in the playoffs. So that's kind of on one side. This says, so will all the people who have no problem quitting a job to get closer to home with better weather boo 19 for doing the same thing? This says Tkachuk should be welcomed back with high praise. He made his mark with the Flames and was a major key part. He represented both the organization and the city. He was ready to go to go on a different path in his career and made that known in advance. Everyone should save the heckling for Johnny. So those are just, again, some very much mixed reactions.
It's a sample.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's why I think when it gets there and when it gets to that time, I think it's going to be mixed. I don't think it's going to be rousing one way or the other.
Yeah, like, I mean,
and I'm curious to see how it progresses throughout the game.
I mean, Brad Treliving, when he spoke with us, when letting us know what was going on, I think his exact phrasing was very precise. You know, Matthew Tkachuk was well within his contractual rights to explore the avenues he eventually explored, and you know it led to
a blockbuster trade,
the first National Hockey League's first ever sign and trade, to the point where in the league office they had no idea how to process the dang thing, which was really funny to me that they figured out a way to break the NHL systems. On the other hand, I mean, you know, it's he had what, a week, 2 weeks until his arb hearing, not very long. Like the clock was ticking, and you know it's not like, you know,
the old team elected salary arbitration at that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when Jerome Iginla, you know, was asked to waive his no trade clause in. I just think he had a full no move. He was asked to waive his no move in 2013.
Well, he requested a trade, didn't he? Like
it was a little of both.
Yeah,
I think
it was.
I think
it's time.
They had that. I think the story went around. They had that one road trip out west, and the Flames didn't do particularly well. And then Jay Feaster sort of had the conversation with Jerome. Hey, we're kind of sort of thinking of maybe kind of sort of looking at stuff. What would you think if we did that? Because if he's not on board, it ain't happening. But you know, it's not as if you know in both situations they had fairly limited time, and the number of teams that could fit a player's contract isn't exactly extensive. Especially you know right now with you know as we're speaking, something like 20 teams are using LTIR to remain cap compliant. So it's not like every team is flush with cash and able to do the things they want to do. So. I don't know. It's I'm really curious as to
yeah.
I think you can like the player and like the time that he spent here, but I think anytime someone says they want to be somewhere else, I think fans are well within their rights to have their feelings a bit
well,
hurt.
And so look at first of all, I'll preface anything I say with I don't think he did anything wrong. As you said, well within your contractual rights, and I believe in this day and age in the NHL, with the lack of loyalty shown by teams to players, that the player owes just as much loyalty to the team. And if you're well within your contractual rights as a team to treat a player like a commodity, then the player is well within their contractual rights to, you know, be yeah.
And
whatever.
And we've seen some of that throughout the league. I mean, let's just say Vegas. I mean, Vegas has been extremely cutthroat in terms of how they've had to manage their roster, but also because of the salary cap. I mean, the salary cap lends itself to less and less loyalty
you become more of a commodity in a salary cap world for sure. And so, no, I think if you're well within your contractual rights on either side, I don't think you ever do anything wrong. I don't think that there is anything morally wrong done or anything like that. But at the same time, I also don't know if I buy the narrative that suggests that the player did the team such an incredible solid by he did not have a no trade clause, but he basically went about his business like he had a full no move clause because he could. And it's not like he put the Flames in this incredibly advantageous situation. He put them with a deadline and with only a few destinations that he would go to and sign long-term in, and only a few of those few destinations, so an even smaller number, could actually fit him in on their cap. So I don't know if I necessarily am fully on board with the, well, he did the solid and he really did the team a favor. No, he still put the team in a tough spot. He absolutely did. And yes, the GM was able to go out and put together a really good trade and bring in a couple of big-time impact players and a prospect and a first-round pick. Like, Brad did great, and I think better than anybody thought he was going to do. And I believe that the Florida trade was the only trade that kept them competitive, or the only trade that wasn't future, 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 all futures. So they were able to work a great trade with the Panthers, for sure. But I just don't know if I see it quite as the incredible mitzvah, the incredible altruistic and laying my jacket on the puddle so you can walk over it type gesture. I think it was still very much like, hey, I've got some leverage. I'm going to use the leverage, and I give any player all the power in the world to use every single bit of leverage they had. I just don't know if I buy that narrative that, oh, he did them a solid. So if I'm a Flames fan, I'm like, yeah, okay, well, you don't want to be here. So if you do boo him tonight, I don't think you're being classless or anything like that. I'm not suggesting you should boo him. I'm not suggesting that you have to. I'm not suggesting you should do a round of applause. Whatever you feel like, however you're feeling as Matthew returns to the Dome for the first and only time this year, you're justified.
I'll say this. And I commend this Marcus fans for being this literate about player movement and stuff. Think about how Adam Fox gets received here. Adam Fox played zero games for this hockey club. Adam Fox, again, well with his contractual rights to talk to team, to, you know, when talking to this club saying, yeah, not really feeling signing here. When he talked to Carolina, not really feeling signing here, ends up on the team he wanted to, well within his rights to do so.
Yep.
The fans in this market boo him every time he touches the ice the one time a year the Rangers are here. And on one hand, it's really hilarious because it's a college prospect that never put on the jersey, but it's also kind of amazing because this is the type of market you're in.
I can't wait till the Rangers are here. Like, I love it. That was one of the most memorable games of last season. Was because, funny enough, Tkachuk went through the legs and undressed Shesterkin in that game, and Fox did the old. So Matthew does the old Hulk Hogan in Edmonton on Monday night. Remember, Fox did the same thing after he scored that goal. That got called back offside.
That was. I love hockey. I love hockey.
One of my favorite moments.
Fans, we love you. Please keep it classy. That's all we're hoping.
You know who will get a standing ovation? Sean Monahan, and deservedly so. It's a little bit of a different situation with him than it was with either of Matthew or Johnny, for sure. So he'll get his standing O, and deservedly so. And as you said a little earlier this hour, you know, he was the guy that kickstarted a rebuild. He was the guy that gave this organization hope for the future, and that maybe this thing could turn in what was a very, very bleak time. That was not a fun time over those
and
4 or 5 years.
He's a guy that, you know, we heard the interviews with him following multiple seasons and after he moved on to Montreal, of just how rough life was for him. And he was a guy that just gave it all, like, including partially his mobility at times, to this hockey club. And, I think the organization is very appreciative. And I think he landed in a really good spot because Montreal – expectations are not high, and they're able to say, Sean, what do you want to do? And he seems like a rejuvenated player, and knock on wood, he seems like a healthy player too.
A few last texts before we wrap up this portion of the conversation. This says, he's in his contractual rights, but the fans and citizens that actually paid him are not the organization. It baffles me that people think Matthew did a favor by asking for a trade. He planned this 3 years ago when he didn't get the deal he wanted and has said as much. He had no choice at that point. He couldn't force a 1 year deal, and even if he got one and stayed the year, he never would have matched last year's numbers without Johnny, and he knew it. His stock would have dropped on the open market based on his shortlist, and he knew that. A trade when it happened was best for Matthew, not the team. The trade was best for Matthew in Florida. They cleared cap space with guys they wouldn't sign regardless of the trade and got Matthew for a pick and a prospect. If you're at the game tonight and you're a Flames fan, you boo this guy relentlessly, harder than Fox. You boo him to Pronger Tavares level. All right, see, this is why I say it is very mixed. Ruben says, guys, the bottom line is Chucky bailed. He did not want to be in Calgary long term. That's the bottom line. He bailed. This says, Johnny kicked the Flames in the junk, and Matthew followed it up with a kick in the teeth. Big boos for both. Ted says, Tkachuk was a good player for us for a lot of years. Because of that, we were able to get a significant return with this trade. I've got nothing against the guy, and I will cheer for him. And then here's one right down the middle. Hello, gents. Tkachuk was fine. One really great season. I think indifference is warranted. Dude's not a Gimlin. It's a good way to finish it off. See, all across the spectrum, that's what you get on
and,
the text.
And the funniest thing is, even the indifference is articulate, well-reasoned indifference. Matthew Tkachuk, if nothing else, he elects strong feelings, even strong indifference.
Agreed. Somebody also suggested Tim Erickson. That probably would have been another guy
had he been a relevant NHL hockey player enough to get booed.
You had to be like a hockey player that played in the NHL and had any shred of relevance to get booed. So yes, the Flames won that trade.
By
a country mile.
That was the first thing that Jay Feaster had to deal with when he became Flames GM, and I still think it was his best work.
He got 2 second-round picks, which he turned into Wotherspoon and Granlund.
And Skorak.
And he got Roman Horak as a prospect. Not bad for a guy who forced his way out and then turned into a nothing NHL player. He's Pike. I'm Pat. We are underway on this hour of Flames Talk, and that's your look inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. The beer tastes better when it's bought from the place that cheers for your team. Visit your local Calgary Co-op. Wine, spirits, beer. Today.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Dan Vladar getting the start against the Florida Panthers, not Jacob Markstrom. The Flames coming back after a 6-game road trip. They've lost 3 in a row. They're kicking off a 5-game homestand. I don't know. That seems like a traditional spot to go to Jacob.
Especially, you know, Vladar
started 2 of the last 3.
Yeah, he played. They did a 3-4 and basically a 3-3.5 because 2 of the games were afternoon games, and Vladar gets the Wednesday and Vladar gets the Saturday afternoon, and then all of a sudden we're there.
I think he deserves it too, as we talked about on Monday. He's 0-2-1 in his last 3 starts, but in those 3 starts, .939 save percentage. And I know that he wants to be better, and I know that he wants to pick up more W's and feels like he's not helping the team out. But he's giving this team great goaltending right now. He really is.
The only way he could have helped out more is if he can score some goals. I mean, come on, Dan. Why aren't you going and if he didn't pull a Hextall in any of the games, that's the reason that he's 0-2-1 in the last three.
I think he's given them great goaltending. I think he's been the better of the two so far. Doesn't mean that Jacob's game is not going to round into form. But as the second quarter of the season gets underway, Pike, if we were to see Vladar, okay, so in the first quarter he started 5-21 and came in for 40 minutes of another game. So he got 6 appearances in 21, but 5-21 is what he started. If we're talking about the second quarter of the season, if that were to be 7 or 8 of 21. Leading up to the 42-game halfway mark or 41-42-game halfway mark. Like, I have no problem if that is the frequency that we're talking about. So say that we do it another 21-game span. That would be Vladar, say, let's see, goes 7. So that'd be 7-14 or 8-13. Like, I'm okay with that type of frequency. I think he has earned it to this point and has shown nothing to suggest that it's going to be going the other way. And also, you still have a number one goalie. You're still playing your number one goalie a lot. You're still going with Jacob a lot of the time. So I think that you can have Markstrom get the time that he needs to play his way to a higher level while also rewarding Vladar for his high caliber of play so far.
I agree, but I think it's dependent on getting the right results because I think we both know Jacob Markstrom and Dan Vladar take wins and losses very personally. We've seen it after games, you know, looking at post-game media with Dan Vladar, he looked like somebody, he had a death in the family based on his demeanor was after the game. And you want your players to care that much about the results because that's how you're going to get where you want to go. But I think if he plays all the time and plays well and they don't find ways to get W's, I still think you have that stressor on Markstrom to be the guy. And I think when players, anyone, any position, think they need to be the be-all, end-all for the team to win games, I think that's challenging. That's really tough for them. But I also agree with you in terms of the frequency because this is the beginning of the ninth week of the season. The goal/guideline the Flames had as extolled by Daryl Sutter before the second game of the season was they would like to get Dan Vladar into a game a week. He has played five games in the first 8 weeks of the season. That's obviously different. And so I think this 3-4 for him gets him closer. I think if he plays, much more frequently in the next bit, like you said, they can still have, Markstrom be the guy, and they can also get to closer to that game a week balance for him.
And then the other interesting part of this conversation is about Markstrom. Like, I wonder if so this will be one start for him if we go back to his last start was Saturday and before that it was Monday. So it'll be one start in more than a week for Markstrom. Here we are on a Tuesday, so that's one start in more than a week.
And maybe he starts on Thursday. That's assuming he plays on Thursday.
Exactly. I wonder if dialing back the workload, we talked a lot about he needs to play his way to a higher level, all that type of stuff, but I do wonder if even a temporary dialing back, and I've thought about this, not permanently, but even if it's just for this week that we're talking about, you asked Jonathan Huberdeau on Monday in the room about those three games that he missed via injury and how important that was even for him to reset mentally and reset his game. I just wonder a little bit about that for Jacob as well. If not having a stretch where he plays three games in four and plays three or four times in a week, if having a little bit of a lesser workload and less stress mentally, all that type of stuff, could end up being good for him.
Yeah, I mean, we're more and more sports science is looking at, mental fatigue and mental sharpness as something that lends itself to high-end performance, flat out. I mean, you and I, when we're dead tired or we're stressed out, we're not very good at the things we do. And I think that's the same with people in sports. And so if you can figure out a way to help just sort of, clear the head a bit, help him relax a bit, and then have him get that swagger back. Because I think when Markstrom feels like he's Jacob Markstrom, he's a damn good goalie. When he's you know, got the yips, so to speak, it shows. And I think having the ability to and the confidence to lean on Vladar a little bit, like we've seen organizations, even this organization, even, you know, even when they had, you know, a strong number one or a 1A, 1B, the philosophy for a while was play till you lose. And so if that's why, well, that's why when you say, oh, assuming that you know, Markstrom plays against Montreal, if the Flames get a win today and they're, you know, creep above 500 and they think, oh, they can get them a little bit of breathing, a little daylight, creep a little bit closer to the playoff pack. Maybe they give Vladar a little bit of a run.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a downside to it.
And I still think we're talking about a guy who, you never know with this silly position whether or not a guy is going to turn into what you think he could be or reach his potential or whatever, but he's got number one chops. I think he's got number one ability and number one raw talent. And so keep on fostering that. Keep on building that if you're the Flames, because if you can have another guy ascend to being a number one quality goaltender, there is nothing wrong with that. How about that contract that Roope Hintz signed with the Dallas Stars? It's an 8-year contract extension. He's a pending restricted free agent. 8 years, $8.45 million. It kicks in next season. So I have the contract itself. Is a strong one for Dallas. That is a really good hockey player, two-way force. He scored 37. He's almost a point per game over the last 3 years. He had a great year last year. We saw up close and personal, Pike, how big he was in that series against the Flames that went 7 in May. I think that's a really good signing for Dallas. I think that's a guy that scores in the 35 to 40 range and gets you in the 70-point range. Those guys go for $8 to $9 million, and that's what Roope Hintz went for on his contract. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on that deal before we turn it into a Flames conversation.
He's so good, and he's one of those guys that, you know, when, you know, I wherever we talk about the most underrated players in the league, it almost invariably turns into good players and non-traditional market conversation. But Roope Hintz would be the best or in a handful of the best players on most teams in the league. He's just one of those guys, and he's the connective tissue on that line in Dallas that makes them purr so well. And he's so good at so many things that it's really tough to be good at, and he's good at them very quietly. And I think it's really exciting, I think, for a lot of people league-wide to see him get recognized, because he's just so good, and he's also just a very frustrating player to watch if you're in the other team, because he's how do you get around him? He's just so good.
Yeah. And he plays it the right way, and he's only getting better. So I really like that contract for them. I really, really do. Okay, so in saying that, how much of a comparable could that be for Elias Lindholm and his next deal? Now, I'll give you the parameters on where things sit with Lindholm. He turns 28 on Friday. He'll be 29 when his new contract kicks in, whatever that contract looks like. Lindholm is eligible to sign a contract extension starting July 1st of 2023. That's the first day that he's eligible to sign an extension. What does that contract look like? What does that AAV look like? And could Hintz be a comparable? And I threw that out to you earlier, and you're like, well, I got to run some numbers. So
yeah,
what are those numbers
let's
come
get
back with?
Let's get mathy. So I'd say this. So Hintz plays primarily on the wing. He plays some center, but he's mostly a winger. Lindholm is mostly a center who plays some wing. He hasn't really played any wing in the last couple of years.
Yep.
So if I'm his agent, I'm saying he's a center. You mostly want to compare him with centers. But you can still, you know, the universe of comparables for Elias Lindholm is basically anyone who plays that kind of connective role. Lindholm, he's played 684 games. He's got about 0.68 points per game, 0.73 goals per game he's played. Obviously, he's played almost pretty much twice as many NHL games as Hintz has, because Hintz started later. Hintz sort of bounced around first couple of years between, I believe, the Texas Stars and the NHL.
Yep.
But if you're looking for sort of more of an apples-to-apples comparison, if you look at just Elias Lindholm's Calgary numbers, since Lindholm came to Calgary in 2018, 310 games versus 261 for Hintz, pretty close, but then 40, 50 games. Goals per game for Lindholm is 397, or .397, compared to .337 for Hintz. It's,
okay.
It's higher. Points per game, Lindholm is .893 compared to .743 for Hintz. Again, higher. Lindholm's obviously a little bit older, so
Hintz is a 94, Lindholm's a 92.
Yeah, this is Lindholm's 28-year-old season. Hintz is in his 26th.
So, sorry. Hintz is a 96 and Lindholm's a 94. That makes more sense.
So if you're his agent, I'd say if I'm Peter Wallin, Lindholm's agent, when I'm talking to the Flames, I go, "Hey, that Hintz contract looks like a good floor." And I think that's where the conversation starts, because, you know, if you're Lindholm, you're the connective tissue for the Flames. You play first unit power play, first unit penalty kill, first over the boards, most 5-on-5 situations. If it's not Backlund first over the boards in more defensive-oriented situations, it's Lindholm in more offensive-oriented situations. And Lindholm is the offensive driver of that top line right now. We'll see what happens with Jonathan Huberdeau, if he can find some mojo with him on that line. But, you know, if Lindholm's line is going, the team is going. And that's probably more true for Lindholm than anyone else in the team, which, again, probably drives the AAV up. And then you factor in I think the things that would drive up the AAV on the comparable for Lindholm is he's a center. It's a more premium position. He's a right shot. They're harder to find good right shots than left shots. If you're looking for things that would drive the cost down a little bit closer to what Hintz's AAV is now, Lindholm is a little bit older, so he'd be buying more of the back half of his career, more of the down production years. Hintz's career, this will take Hintz from year 27 through year 35.
Sounds right.
And for an 8-year contract for Lindholm would take him from 29 to 37. So you're buying, once you get past 35, the production starts to tail off significantly. So those are the kind of things that would have to be factored in. But it's one of those deals that's going to start building a marketplace for what Lindholm's conversation
so
look like.
So the reason I brought it up is because immediately after Hintz signed, I saw people in Vancouver talking about how this might be a comparable for Bo Horvat, if indeed the Canucks and Horvat even agree on something, if indeed he's not traded. But a lot of people in Vancouver were saying, well, this could be a similar number for Horvat, although, you know, Hintz's overall numbers probably better than Horvat's, even though Bo's having an incredible first quarter of his season in Vancouver. So it got me thinking. Now, again, Lindholm's a little older than both Horvat and Hintz, but it got me thinking, knowing that we're only, 7 months away now from Lindholm being eligible to re-sign his or to re-up and sign an extension. He's close. Like, it's all of a sudden getting to that point where you're in that window, and you think of what Lindholm has done. You just ran through the numbers. So I consider Lindholm a 30-goal guy. I know he's only hit 30 or more once technically, but he was at 29 before the 19-20 season got halted with, 12 games to go. He was going to be a 30-goal scorer for the first time. He was a 30-goal scorer and a 40-goal scorer last year. I consider Lindholm to be a 30-goal guy. That's right. I think 30 goals, 70 points, that's kind of the ballpark range for Lindholm perennially in the NHL. You know what 30-goal, 70-point guys make in the NHL?
Do you know what 30-goal, 70-point right shot centers do?
Yeah, like in the $8 million AAV range and higher.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think the conversation has to start at something around 8x8, and then you build it from there. And I think 8x8 be competitive, and I think especially let's be completely honest here. I mean, you know, we talk about all the things that Michael Backlund does for the hockey club, and one of the reasons why the Flames signed Michael Backlund to a contract at the time, which probably still does overpay him relative to his offensive production alone, I think the Flames and their analytics folks looked at the things that Backlund did, all the areas of the game he touched, and what you would need to do to replace those impacts, and went, let's just give him this deal. It makes more sense. I think that probably a similar conversation happens with Lindholm, because how many, you know, you're not finding defensively responsible, offensively potent guys with that kind of shot who can win faceoffs, play in every situation, and play with pace on the open market. They just don't get there. And so if you let him go to the open market, you're going to drive yourself insane trying to replace him.
For sure. And I mean, ideally, if you could get him, well, you know, think about it. Like, if you could get him on a 7-year deal, it would work well from a window standpoint, because it would expire then at the same time as Huberdeau's deal and Uyghur's deal. If you could get him on a 7, that would, because, yeah, the 8 years for Huberdeau and Uyghur kick off next year, and by the time Lindholm's deal would
start.
Then that
would start up too.
So that, if you could get him on a 7-year deal, if you maybe had to go 7 times 8.25 to get the one, like, I think that you think about doing that. And he's been on such a good value contract. He's been under $5 million in every game that he has played as a member of the Calgary Flames, as a Selke Trophy finalist last year, as a guy who is in his sleep scoring 20, and again, as I said, I think he's a 30-goal guy in the NHL, and you've had that for under $5 million since he got here. That's stupid. He deserves to get paid. He deserves to be paid market value for what he does.
Okay, devil's advocate here.
Okay.
Are you comfortable having that many guys sign past the age of 35 making fairly hefty numbers? Because my
answer to that question is no, but I am less comfortable, to your point, letting Elias Lindholm walk away. It was the same conversation about Johnny. Was I comfortable giving $10.5 million to Johnny at the time? No. I mean, that's a high number, but I'd rather have that than him walk for nothing.
And I think this is the – when I know sometimes fans roll their eyes when we talk about, like, us folks who study contracts, we get into our nerd bona fides by going, what about the contract structure? How much is bonuses? But we've seen, you know, not to pick on Milan Lucic – He negotiated the contract. Milan Lucic's contract is extremely bonus heavy, and you lose money buying him out. You don't gain any cap space,
right?
Which is a great for the player. It's fantastic. They negotiated. It's great. If you're the team, you're super nervous signing guys past the age of 30, especially past the age of 35, with bonus heavy contracts. Jonathan Huberdeau, because of who he is, Jonathan Huberdeau, 100-point player, leader of the team, probably going to wear a letter, you know, for as long as he's here. He's the type of guy, because he's a premium player, if you're the GM, you grit your teeth and bear it, right? Yeah, you grin and bear it, because, you know, you probably can handle a few guys on quote-unquote bad contracts on the back nine if they perform in the front part of that deal. But there's risk involved. But if you mentioned it yourself, Noah Hanifin, whose contract is also up the same time as Elias Lindholm, mm-hmm. Hanifin is a steal. Both him and Elias Lindholm are some tidy work. They are highway robbery relative to their impacts. That also means that you're probably going to end up overpaying them if you sign them to a long-term deal, you know, an 8-year deal that captures their late 30s, simply because that's how production tends to work, unless you're Mark Giordano and you're a unicorn.
It's true. I just would rather... You know, Hanifin's a slightly different conversation, but I still would lean towards re-signing him. Because I don't think that Hanifin gets... Like, I think Hanifin has been fairly... I think it's been a good contract, but I don't think it's been as much of a steal as it's been for Lindholm. Like, I think Hanifin's next deal, I don't think you're talking about a massive raise, whereas we're talking about $3.5-4 million being added, right?
Realistically, for Hanifin, you're probably talking something in the sixes. High fives, low sixes, somewhere in that range.
Which isn't that much than what he's making now.
And if you're, you know, if unless you have, you know, unless you're getting votes for trophies, like, say, Mackenzie Weegar has done a lot of Norris ballots. So Mackenzie Weegar tends to get bonuses, because that's what happens when you get on ballots. You tend to get bonuses. Jonathan Huberdeau, he finished top three, or four, he was the top five for the Hart, which means you tend to get some pretty hefty bonuses. If you have those and you have that leverage and you can go into a negotiation, like, if I'm an agent and if I have Elias Lindholm as my client, this feels pretty easy to me, because there's some clear comparables developing. And also, if you want to make an argument that the cap should be a little bit higher for him, or you should get a no move or some bonuses or some kind of a sweetener, you have a lot of votes on his resume that say there's some value to him relative to the rest of the league.
Right now, Lindholm's at like 4.8. Let's just ballpark 4.8 is what he's at right now.
4.85.
So if you were to go to 8, you're adding 3.15. Yep. So you're adding 3.15 to the cap. I'm okay with that, knowing that the cap is going to be going up here, especially when Lindholm's raise would start to kick in.
Yeah, if you're someone who's in love with this core group, and I think based on the performances we've seen in the aggregate from this group, I think if you want to talk yourself into being in love with the core group, there's enough cap wiggle room developing over the next couple of years with revenues increasing and the cap going up, especially if it starts going up this year. You can probably give these guys market value without having to blow up the roster.
Well, and let's also not forget that they've committed 8 years starting next season to both Huberdeau and Weegar. So they've committed those 8 years. What would be the point? I mean, like, you know what? Lindholm, we're gonna trade Lindholm for
you futures. Don't need a center. Come on, Pat. You don't need a center.
A Selke Trophy caliber center? Who needs that? And he's looked like a number one center for the most part here over the last month. So if you could get him at 8x8 or 7x8.25 or something like that, all day. And again, to your devil's advocate question earlier, I'm not super comfortable having a bunch of guys at money like, but again, I'd rather do that. I'd rather risk that than risk having to replace Elias Lindholm and looking for a replacement for the next 5 years.
And I'm sure upstairs that
Lindholm's the first guy that's been anywhere close to a number one center on this team in decades.
Since Joe Neuendijk.
Since Joe Neuendijk.
I think the conversation they're probably having upstairs is Chris Snow and his crew giving Brad for living some version of, okay, Brad, it's probably going to work, but you're going to hate the contracts by like 2031. Are you cool with that? And if you think you can keep your crew together and build around it and do some things, and maybe you bring a Coronado in at an entry-level deal to contribute. You still have Connor Zeri on an entry-level deal for 2 more years after this one at a very palatable cap hit. You have Pelche for 1 more year, and so on and so forth. If you believe in your drafting and development team's ability to find guys in entry-level deals or close to it who can slot in and fill out your roster, fill your boots. You might as well do it. But you're still going to hate those contracts when they're all like 33, 34, 35 and making $8 million.
He's Pike. I'm Steinberg. Our outstanding producers today have been Cam Hughes and Taylor Dingman. Thank you to all of the friends of Flames Talk as we wrap up this hour. Friends of Flames Talk in this hour brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Unlock your home with the touch of your phone. Upgrade to smart locks online at CalgaryLockandSafe.com.